We've got a lot to get to on this Monday scramble. An amazing Sunday for Brandon Grace as he captures his first win on the PGA Tour, while Jason Day falters over the weekend at Harbortown Golf Links, and Luke Donald cannot close things out on Hilton Head Island, still winless since the Valspar in 2012. Hello and welcome. I'm George Savarikas with Will Gray and Ryan Lavner. And guys, first off, we got to get to Brandon Grace in that final round, 66. He had been kind of knocking at the door on the PGA Tour. What do you think of his performance on Sunday?
Yeah, definitely rock solid in the clutch. This kind of seems like a natural progression. You've seen him win 7 times on the European Tour. He's won a lot in his homeland of South Africa. And then he kind of started to make a jump. He contended at Chambers Bay until that foul ball on the 16th hole Sunday last summer. Then he was a rock solid stud at the President's Cup, going 5-0. And you thought, as long as he kept playing a little bit more in the U.S., it was not if but when he was going to get that first PGA Tour win. I'm a little surprised it came on a ballpark like Hilton Head, but clearly he's not only just a long hitter off the tee, he's got the short game to match.
I was gonna say, don't forget the PGA Championship. He also had a top
five there. That's true.
At Whistling Straits. What were you going to say, Ryan?
I thought this was really one of the most predictable outcomes of the year. Not necessarily that he won in Hilton Head, but that Brandon Grace won on the PGA Tour this year. I mean, it was a given.
Where were you banging this drum for?
Yeah, predictable?
He's a top 15 player in the world. Of course it was going to happen this year.
He's
got 10 worldwide wins since 2012.
I mean, it's a big difference to go from winning significantly.
Not really. Yeah.
South Africa to winning on the PGA Tour.
A win is a win. It begats winning. So the fact
that Charles Schwartzel's won twice in the PGA Tour.
He's one of the most. Brandon Grace is the most prolific winner anywhere since 2012. Anywhere. Sunshine Tour, European Tour, PGA Tour now.
Or
10 wins.
Throw it in the Sunshine Tour.
It's a win. Developmental Tour.
There's this perception that just because you don't win on the PGA Tour, that it doesn't matter.
No, but there's also a perception that it's not easy to win on the PGA Tour. He said Schwartzel just got off the hump. Louis Oosthuizen hasn't won since the British Open in 2010. He is very much capable
Brandon Grace hasn't even played on the PGA Tour for a year. He got his PGA Tour status at the U.S. Open last year. So the fact that he did this in, what, 12 events?
Predictable.
It's pretty impressive.
Cannot be the adjective. That I'd say it's surprising that he got done that quick. We saw some flashes.
I don't think it was surprising that he got done this quick. I'm actually surprised it didn't happen earlier.
If you would have told me Brandon Grace, are you surprised Brandon Grace won on the PGA Tour, I would say no. But if you would have asked me to list people that I think 2 months ago they're definitely going to win this year, he's not on my top 10 list.
Not on your top 10 list.
No, I would put guys like Dustin Johnson, Henrik Stenson.
No, guys who have not won who are going to take the next step in their career. Where would you put them?
That's a very different list. I'm just talking about guys in general that were going to break through and win on the PGA Tour. DJ, Stenson, those guys are all very capable. Justin Rose.
Because you're saying as a top 15 player, it's predictable. But you look at all the guys who are top 15 in the world right now or top 20 who haven't won.
And they also have been playing that well. Brandon Grace has four top fives in his last 9 starts.
Danny Willett was top 15 2 weeks ago, and I didn't see him as a guy that was definitely a lock to win on the PGA Tour anytime soon.
Well, he didn't have a PGA Tour card, so he couldn't have. The fact of the matter is Brandon Grace has just now recently gotten his PGA Tour card. He's just now playing these events. He was going to capitalize at some point this year. I was actually surprised it didn't happen earlier. To be honest with you.
You really thought he would win in quicker than 12 starts on the PGA Tour?
I almost thought he was going to win the Masters.
Until he missed the cut. Just like he missed the cut at the Honda.
Sleeper pick.
He hasn't missed a cut in the Sunshine Tour, though.
That's true. He's batting 1,000 down in Johannesburg.
No, I agree with the overarching premise that he is talented enough to win on the PGA Tour. And if he said when it's all said and done by the end of the year, if he had a win or two, then you wouldn't be shocked. But to say that it's predictable, given how unpredictable it is for guys in the top 15 to rattle off wins in the PGA Tour, I think that's where Will and I have trouble totally.
Perfect golf course for him, ball striker, and keep it below the canopy of the trees. He's a decent putter. Those are small, flat greens. It was going to happen. It doesn't surprise me at all that it was.
But I feel like he was like Danny Willett. Like, no one was talking about Danny Willett going into Sunday at Augusta. No one was saying, whoa, Brandon Grace is only 3 off the lead. It's, hey, can Luke Donald get this done, or can the guys at 6 make a run, or is Matt Kuchar, the winner 2 years ago, going to do this?
Because there's a perception that he's not that great of a player.
That's not the perception. It's just he hasn't.
That is the perception.
There's a lack of recognition.
There's a lack of recognition.
Even CBS announcers are like, he's not very well known in golf circles.
he's not well-known in the U.S. That's totally accurate. Like, Danny Willett wasn't well-known. It doesn't mean they're not great players. They're both top 15 in the world.
Because there's a perception that what happens outside of the U.S. doesn't matter.
Because it's fairly accurate. If you look historically, what's been done on the PGA Tour by guys who are accomplished in Europe, it doesn't always translate. Colin Montgomery, Exhibit A. Lee Westwood. Darren Clark. Like, there's been a whole generation of European guys who peeled off 10, 15, 20, 25 victories in Europe. Then they come over here and fall completely flat. So that
I think Brandon Grace with top fives in two majors last year should have smashed that perception. No?
Lee Westwood has plenty of top fives in majors.
Do you know how many Lee Westwood finished top three at Augusta?
It was one of his first times playing in the States. Brandon Grace. He's 27 years old.
I understand, but he's got a point made. Colin Montgomery never won in the U.S. Lee Westwood, who's been playing the American Tour for years, only has two wins, and the last one was back in 2010. I mean, it's not an automatic that just because you have the game to win or contend on the PGA Tour that you're just going to get a trophy for showing up 10, 15 starts later.
That's a fair point.
But he did get a tartan jacket, so is it. Sweet. But the 66 was, I mean, the guy, like the point that you're contending to, the guy clearly has game. So for him to finally actualize that on the PGA Tour, now he's on the radar, and you could see him possibly winning two, three times this season, and when it's all said and done, we wouldn't be stunned. Another guy who seems like he's possibly knocking at the door, Bryson DeChambeau, to finish T4, his first time out of the gates. Would you say that's predictable, or what term would you use?
I thought he would play well. This, I think, finishing in the top five was certainly a bit of a surprise. But here's something that I found was really funny. I went back through the archives of stories I've written over the past year about Bryson, and his college coach at SMU, Jason Enlow, told me after Bryson won the NCAA championship that Bryson was one of the top ball strikers in the world. He didn't mean in college golf. He was talking about top 20, 25 guys in the world, that he peers it as well as anyone, and then when he gets out there, it's going to be apparent to everybody. When Bryson's pro debut, he finishes more than 10 shots ahead of the field in strokes gained tee to green. He was gaining more than 10 shots to the field with his ball striking. It was exceptional, and if he just putted a little bit better, I think we're talking about Bryson DeChambeau winning in his pro debut.
And I love, real quick, guys, showing players who won the U.S. Amateur and the NCAA Championship in the same year, Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, Ryan Moore, and how they fared in their professional debut. A lot of these guys within five starts either had like a win or a runner-up finish, but for Bryson, his first time out of the gates, to have all the headlights on him after Augusta, what was your take of what we saw out of him?
Yeah, it was certainly impressive. I think, as Lav said, if he putted decently, he's definitely right in the mix there. I think he has to write Jason Kokrak a little thank you note for the 72nd hole double bogey that got him about another 40, 50 grand.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all a numbers game for Bryson right now in terms of trying to get special temporary membership and then trying to get his card for next season and things like that. I will say, as impressive as it was, I wouldn't mind selling some DeChambeau stock right now.
Selling.
I think that
we're talking about him on the Ryder Cup.
Yes,
I mean, the hype machine's gotten way out of
Ryder
control.
Ryder Cup talk?
There's been Ryder Cup talk.
It was a little Ryder Cup talk.
It's just out there in the social media sphere. Anyway,
I think a couple more top tens.
Maybe. But here's the thing.
Pump
the brakes. Exactly. This is a kid who has great potential, and he's going to be on the PGA Tour for years to come, and he's going to get a win probably sooner rather than later. I don't know if he's on the Brandon Grace fast track, but we'll have to see. But the point is, all of a sudden, this kid is coming out off his internship where he's playing a bunch of pro events. He played well, and now he's got a top five finish, and we're ready to roll out the red carpet here. I wouldn't mind just slowing it down a little bit and see how he does.
So I think the Ryder Cup talk is preposterous, but as far as him possibly...
Give me a wild card pick. Would you rather have him or Bill Haas?
Give me Bill Haas or door number two, and I'm going to go door number two.
We're kicking the can a little far down the road. But my whole point is, I wouldn't be stunned if the guy was able to get special temporary and win.
He's already a third of the way there.
And win on the PGA Tour this year. That wouldn't be surprising, because I think the mental makeup that he has, the thing that impressed me the most about what he did at Augusta was he makes triple on Friday, takes his cap off, smiles, and shakes the hand. Mm-hmm. And you can tell mentally that it's not like he and Jordan Spieth are cut from the same cloth, but he also has a maturity and a poise that in a big moment, if he faces disappointment, it doesn't completely deter him or completely throw him off kilter, that he can still handle and conduct himself in the big moment the way that you would hope to see a Jim Furyk or a guy who's been there for 20, 25 years. So I think that coupled with what we saw out of his ball striking has him possibly poised for a big year, but Ryder Cup talk and multi-win season could be a little far-fetched.
Yeah, we can revisit that in August or September. I think it's clear, though, that what happened in the fall with SMU and getting the postseason ban, deciding to drop out of school, was really a blessing
it's
in disguise. I mean,
yeah.
This kid is rolling into his PGA Tour schedule now where he has to make hay in these 7 sponsor exemptions that are allowed to non-members. He has to make hay, and he is so prepared. I mean, this is old hat to him. He's not showing up at a PGA Tour event all wide-eyed and unsure about where he goes and how to allot his time practicing. I mean, he's going there now with the intention to win, and that's so dissimilar to what the John Rahm, Robbie Shelton, Bo Haas are going to be facing. I mean, the guy on the PGA Tour this summer, he's just full steam ahead now, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he wins the $750,000 or whatever the case may be to get his card for next year.
Real quick, yeah. I know it was a very unique set of circumstances that let Bryson leave school early, obviously with SMU going on probation, but we've seen in NBA and college ball, there have been outliers like Brandon Jennings, who skipped college to play in Europe and used that as his internship. Bryson didn't want to burn all his sponsors' invites, so he played in Australia, played Abu Dhabi. Do you think we'll see more top-tier college players who could garner an invite to a European Tour event or in Australia like that who say, wow, look how much it helped and benefited Bryson down the road
to
get these...
To
cherry-pick a 3 or 4 so you're not burning your 7 to get more starts. Do you think that once in a blue moon that we could see more guys try and follow that
Maybe
path?
Once in a blue moon. I think this is just a case of the stars really lined up with what happened at SMU and the fact that Bryson was the reigning U.S. amateur champ and the reigning NCAA individual champ that gave him the cachet to really get those starts, not only in the U.S., but then in Australia and Dubai.
And it was
Qatar.
A tremendous marketing opportunity for him to grow his brand, get some recognition, kind of get everybody with the whole scientist-artist talk. It was just a perfect storm, I think, that aligned. I'd be shocked.
Yeah, I mean, you could have top college guys like Lee McCoy or Bo Hostler, who right now might have the game to challenge DeChambeau, but they don't necessarily have the brand and they don't have the recognition that would go international to get the opportunities that he had to play earlier this season.
A guy who has a lot of recognition, Jason Day, and he had talked about, he had the 36-hole co-lead, was saying, mentally I'm tired, but I'm grinding through it, and then, do you think that was just utterly fatigue on Saturday? Well, I mean,
I think it all just caught up with him. I mean, everybody hits the wall after the Masters. That's why you see a lot of the top players taking the week off. It hits everyone differently. And I think just the build up to it just kind of exploded. He wasn't as mentally sharp as he probably should have, and he got a bad break. I think I was on the third hole, hit a tree and bounced into the hazard, and after that he just kind of collapsed from there. But he said something very interesting.
He did break 80.
On Sunday afternoon, barely. He barely broke 80. Ended up finishing in the top 25. But he said something interesting after the final round, that he's only been home to Columbus, Ohio, for 8 days since December 28th. I think that's a glimpse into what it's like for these top PGA Tour players, where you're number one and you have all these corporate obligations, and he's on the road traveling to Palm Springs to try and get his game in gear. I mean,
but some of
it's mid-April.
Some of that's self-inflicted, where he went to visit Tiger and spend a few days with him and whatnot. So that's why I agree that it's mid-April, but the guy took three and a half months off.
And before December 28th, yes.
Yeah, and he's made
one. But he did it because he knew it was going to be an onslaught once he got going again.
Yeah. He's made 8 starts in the PGA Tour. It's not like he's a Danny Lee whose divisor is
72.
Something ridiculous. So that's why I'm concerned personally that we're hearing that he's already fatigued. There's one major in the books. You've got 3 majors in 6 weeks and the Olympics on the back end. If he's already leaking oil now, then what the heck's going to happen June, July, and August?
Here's my thing with Jason Day, though. When are we supposed to believe him? This is like the boy who cried wolf to a certain extent, because he said at the match play his back's hurt. He's struggling to get through the round, and he wipes the floor with the entire field. He goes to Bay Hill and goes basically wire to wire, and he says, well, you know, I'm a little tired. I'm not sure. I wouldn't want the Masters to start next week. I'm not at 100%, and he wins another event. So he has said
Bay
this.
Bay Hill was before match play, the week before.
Yes. All right. So either way. All right.
Same point. Yeah.
The point is, he has said multiple times before, I'm tired. I'm not at 100%. I'm feeling fatigue, and it has not at all affected his play. He's been able to go out and dominate on a world-class stage. Whereas now, finally, he slows up and he shoots a 79 or whatever. But then he did bounce back with a 68 on Sunday. So clearly, he's not exactly totally off kilter. It was a bad day in the office. But we've heard this time and time again from Jason Day. And more often than not, he's able to put it behind him and still perform at a high level.
And weren't we just talking about this with Spieth? How he's got this jet-setting schedule, he's tired, there's no time to catch his breath. Well, he's not playing again until the Players. That's 3 or 4 weeks off. He can
regroup. Yeah, but that's his only break from now until, like, August.
Still a month in the middle of the season's pretty good. Jason Day is probably not going to play again until the Players either. So he has a chance now to catch his breath. He said he's lost a lot of weight. He was sick during the match play in addition to the back injury. So I think there is a time during this Texas swing for him to catch his breath and kind of regroup.
How much of that is the modern day golfer? Because you look at kind of contemporaries, if you will, from the previous generation. How often do we hear Phil Mickelson say, I'm exhausted. You know, I've played 3 weeks. Or Ernie Els, man, I'm really dragging.
Like, listen, Phil.
It seems like the common refrain now to throw it out there, and then that way you have a crutch if something goes wrong, and then if you win, it's not like, man, I'm...
And they get no sympathy from fans who say, you're flying private, and,
no, I
mean, you're getting paid millions of dollars.
For those of us who peel back the onion and see behind the scenes, it is tiring. Like, I get it, but it seems like that is a more common refrain now than it was even 15 years ago.
I do think, though, also, just because there are more opportunities, whether it's on the global stage, the wraparound schedule that's having guys play a couple times in the fall, whereas before you saw Phil Mickelson put the clubs in the trunk in September, and he's not going to be seen again until Pebble Beach in February. And now they're playing in China in November, and they're playing the President's Cup in late October, and there are more opportunities for those guys to just get out there. And
there's more corporate and sponsorship and charity aspects. Yeah, absolutely.
And they can be highly incentivized to play certain events in October,
indeed.
November.
I'd be willing to be first alternate at the Singapore Open.
So, Luke Donald, it was a great. It was nice to see the former world number one start to play well again. Wasn't a shock by any means that it was at Harbortown Golf Links. But once again, we see a guy who has a 54-hole lead who can't close it out. It's seemingly every week, unless it's a top-tier guy and not even they can always close it out. Is this just the new age PGA Tour where no lead is safe?
I think the guys are really good. I think the people who are chasing them have no pressure. They can just kind of free will it. But I think the fact remains that Tiger spoiled us for so many years. He was 43 of 45 with a 54-hole lead in his PGA Tour career. It's just insane. That's 95%. Conversion rate, and when you look at that over time, it was about 40% for his competitors. So, I mean, he was just a statistical anomaly. You know, there's a number of factors that go into this, but even this year we've seen Rory blow a 54-hole lead. We've seen Jordan Spieth very notably blow a 54-hole lead. Now Luke Donald, who's not in the same caliber of player as those two, but it's just hard. It's just hard to win.
Yeah, and I think that this course especially seems to favor the chase pack, just the way that front nine sets up, you're able to get off to a fast start. And Luke Donald, each of his last three 54-hole leads have come at this course, and each of the three times he's finished second. And he said on Sunday, maybe next time I just need to be 3 or 4 shots back because leading is not working for me. And clearly it's just a course that's set up well for the chase pack where you can go out and freewheel it and you can be more aggressive to some of those pins that are tucked away in those tight greens at Harbortown. And all of a sudden you get a couple under par and you start feeling pretty good about things.
All right, let's play a quick game of who would you take. I personally would go Jason Day if I had a 54-hole lead to protect.
Now, would you have said Jason Day a year and a half ago?
No.
Because he was 1 for 7 before last year, right?
He had 2 wins a year and a half ago. So, obviously, right. I wouldn't pick him because he's never closed anything out.
Right.
But when you win 6 times in 15 starts, 4 in a 6-start span, the thing that impresses me the most, which I told you guys earlier, was at the Barclays and the BMW. He led by about, 4 to 6? And then he expands those leads. And the easiest thing to do when you're leading is to start playing tentative, like Rory did at Doral. Mm. The harder thing to do is
like
to say...
Like Spieth on the back nine at Augusta.
Well, you can argue, yes, you can argue the case. He's fighting his swing also, but he was, yes. But for Day, he wants to step on the throat of someone and not just win by 2 or 4. He wants to win by 10. So
that's also something that we've seen from Rory in, I mean, take Doral out of the equation, but that's a very Rory characteristic.
So would
you
take
2 to 4 to 8?
I could talk
myself into Rory. You want to take Spieth and then we'll round
I think I still would take Spieth. Even the calamitous finish that we just saw, I would throw that away. I would always skew towards the best putter, and that's Jordan Spieth.
Because we have seen prior to that run also, Spieth had a comparable record to Jason Day where he's at the Players and other notable events where he had either a share or had the 50
Masters below. Players back-to-back in 2014.
Yep. Yeah, but that learning curve was pretty quick for Jordan Spieth.
I agree.
Jason Day's won his last three in a row. Rory had a great record before his Doral miscue in the final round. Jordan Spieth, though, he has the intangibles in the short game. The short game is the great equalizer, and that's why he's
But how long
had some
can
success.
You keep a hot putter? That's been kind of the big
he's
difference.
He's kept it his entire life.
Not this year. If you look statistically, compared to what he did last year, he putted great at Augusta. But I'm saying overall this season, he has had one win on the PGA Tour.
He probably wasn't going to make a third of his putts from 25 feet. I think
that's
that
what I'm saying.
Say.
How long can you ride a putter like that?
He's still pretty good from 10 feet.
I agree.
Look, if you go back to Sunday with Brandon Grace at Heritage, of all the birdies he made, the shot that I think won him the tournament was the 15-foot par save on 16, where Luke Donald was
after
on. He's up by three. Luke Donald's got a good chance of birdie the hole before, where all of a sudden you get a three-shot lead, go to one. Luke misses his putt, and Brandon Grace has the putt that Gary McCord says no one has read this right the whole day, and he puts it right in the heart. And that's the sort of shot, that going back to what you said about Spieth, it's the 10, 12, 15-foot putts that are absolute daggers when you're leading, or they're daggers for the chase pack to see when you're trying to catch up to guys. And that's the sort of thing that won Brandon Grace the title on Sunday, and that's what Spieth delivers.
And that was like Danny Willett at Augusta making the putt on 16, and then he gets up and down on 17. Those were two big 4 to 6 foot putts that really separate himself from the rest of the pack.
If Spieth hadn't blown his 5-shot lead on Sunday at Augusta National, would you have picked Jordan Spieth as the best closer?
No, I'd still take Jason Day.
Really?
Yes, because Jason Day is the type
who was 1 for 7. Who was 1 for 7 before last year?
Yes. What's Spieth's stats?
I don't have them on.
Exactly. You only picked your counter argument because I guarantee you Spieth has a similar closing rate. And the reason I already said it, I'm reiterating it, is Day wants to expand his lead.
You think Spieth wants to give it back?
No, I don't think Spieth plays with the same type of firepower that Jason Day does.
He doesn't have the same type of firepower.
Yes, and that's why I would take. I'm not saying Spieth wants to give it back, but I'm saying Spieth, he won by 8 at Kapalua, but I don't think his MO is the same as when Jason Day is firing on all cylinders and he has a 54-hole lead. I would take him over Jordan Spieth.
It's not like Jordan Spieth had a one-shot 54-hole lead at Augusta and boosted it to 5 at the turn. Not like that happened.
Did he close it out?
I understand that the 12th hole happened, but I'm saying that it's not like this.
You're saying who with their A game would you take? I would take Jason Day.
I would take Jason Day with A game.
A game?
That's where the argument is.
His combination of length and touch around the greens is unmatched in golf.
Yeah. All right, let's get to my favorite story of the weekend. The Open de España.
Yes.
You had to be up bright and early to catch this on Golf Channel. A really neat story how it played out. It was like a U.S. Open, basically. Andrew Beef Johnson, the 27-year-old Englishman. Where's the beef? Well, he got his first
career. The winner's circle.
European, in the winner's circle. Here was his sound after he won the Open de España.
Been like that all week. I mean, you can see the emotions running out of you right now. I mean, what does it feel like to win on the European Tour?
That's what dreams come true, and pretty speechless.
Good man. I mean, what are you going to do after this? Obviously, party hard.
I think next weekend I'm back home, North Mid. I'm going to get hammered.
My man. Let's toss a pipe back there.
Yeah, so that Barrett. So, what would you guys do if you got your first win?
I think get hammered is a great answer.
Would you take the week off like he was doing? He was going back to England.
Yeah.
Oh God, why would you ever play the week after?
Yeah.
You wouldn't be ready to go until Friday.
Yeah. So let's think this through. You won the Open de España. Would you fly home to go rip it up with your friends, or would you pick a city nearby to where you won in that country and just say, hey, let's let loose for a few days?
I think it depends
on Barcelona.
It could. Now, Open de España, you've got some options. If I win the Made in Denmark, I might just go home. But given the locale,
Copenhagen's not enough for Will Gray. Punt, but Spain,
Barcelona has some appeal.
You can still get trashed on the plane home.
That's true, I guess. I would lean more often than not, though. I'd go home, get with the boys, and let's toss one back.
It's Open de España. It'd be hard to resist the allure of some of the cities there, but I couldn't think of a better celebration than to get home, go nuts for a couple of days, slowly shake the cobwebs, and then 2 weeks later reemerge in the European Tour as well.
I like it.
It's probably much different than what Brandon Grace is going through this week, where he's going to get his teeth kicked in at TPC San Antonio?
I don't know. I think he might have a good week. He likes that course just like he likes
it. I'm just saying it's a brutal golf course. Not exactly the way to welcome
the Chambers Bay. So was Whistling Straits.
Did I hear this right? You're selling Brandon Grace at the Valero Texas Open, which we're about to preview now.
Sure.
So Jason Day, Adam Scott, people can go back to back.
Let's tee it up now. Valero Texas Open real quick as we wind down our Monday scramble. Apparently, we should bet heavy against Brandon Grace the week after
who was a guaranteed to win at some point.
Yep. And
but now that he's got the win, we're betting against him.
Real quick, guys, here's what we got this week. Swinging Skirts LPGA Classic, of course, Lydia Ko winner there. Bass Pro Shop Legends of Golf. I was at this event last
year. Sweet golf course.
Really neat. Top of the Rock, the par 3 course is hard to beat, and the Shenzhen International European Tour in China. So as we take a look at the Valero Texas Open last year, if you remember, it was before the Masters. Jimmy Walker, a winner over Jordan Spieth. Is a guy or a couple guys to keep an eye on?
I'm interested to see what Phil does. He was a late entry, decided last week he's going to play. So surprising to see him miss the cut at the Masters and miss it the way he did, shooting a 79 in the second round.
I thought you meant beltless.
Oh, no, that's also...
That too is also a surprise.
Might have been a combination of factors. But I'm interested to see how he does at this event. As Lav said, this is a course that beats you up. It's the hardest non-major course, TPC San Antonio, on the entire PGA Tour schedule. So we're going to see plenty of doubles and others and things
16s,
like that.
16s, maybe.
Maybe a 16 if Kevin Na is feeling frisky. But Phil is a guy that I'm interested in seeing.
It's windy. It's long.
It's going to rain this week,
too. Really hard. It's going to rain. There you go. It's going to make it even longer. This just has the makings of like a Charlie Hoffman week. No one plays TPC San Antonio better.
I knew it was your one and done.
He's my one and done
Charlie
guy.
Charlie Hoffman and
he's
Freddie Yock.
He's so good.
At this course.
That's your like John Doe golfer, yes. Generic A.
Just like Luke Donald loves Heritage, you get to a one and done with Valero, you're going Charlie Hoffman or Freddie Jacobson.
Or Daniel Summerhayes.
All right.
In other words, this will be a great podcast next week where we're recapping the Valero Texas Open.
Predictably, Daniel Summerhayes will get his first career PGA Tour.
Of course, predictably,
I remember last year, I think Jimmy Walker won at 7-under, and Spieth was at 3-under, something along those lines. So for me as a fan, I enjoy certain weeks like this where guys who shoot 69 or 70 can actually make up ground on the field, where it rewards good ball striking, and it's not just a birdie fest, which can be...
We just had a tough Masters. We had a relatively tough RBC Heritage. Now we're going to have a tough...
Yeah.
Valero, Texas.
Then we'll get to Zurich, and you can have 25-under
win. Then we'll be in New Orleans, and it'll be a little different.
And it'll be glorious.
22-under won last year in New Orleans. Real quick as we wind it down, first off, let's get to Mike Weir. I know you wanted to kind of touch on the little blow-up that had happened. He's clearly been struggling with his game for quite some time.
Really?
Took a leave.
A little bit.
78 WD.
Yeah, so he's playing the Heritage on a sponsor invite, and he shoots 78 and then withdraws, and he gets called out by tour rookie Dowie Vanderwalt, who says, hang it up, Mike, that you shouldn't use the sponsor invite if you're not going to play all 36. Mike Weir is 0 for his last 24 worldwide starts. He's either missed the cut or withdrew 24 straight events, hasn't played the weekend since the CIMB Classic in October of 2014. So I think it's an interesting dilemma because Mike Weir certainly deserves these sponsor invites, and if the tournament directors are going to hand them out to him.
Deserves the sponsor invites?
As a Masters champion, as a former world-class player.
13 years ago.
But Mike Weir, if I'm a tournament director, Mike Weir is going to bring people in. Dowie Vanderwalt is not going to boost my revenue.
If you're a fan there, do you want to see Mike Weir shoot 70 or follow a couple holes of Mike Weir, or do you want to see Dowie Vanderwalt?
Or do you want to see a young player who they can burn sponsor exemption on?
That may be
that's
good,
who I would prefer.
But that's their choice. That's why it's a sponsor.
Right, so you should be directing your anger, Dowie should, Mr. Vanderwalt, at the tournament directors, not Mike Weir. Mike Weir is just trying to find his game somehow.
And I think it's absurd for another guy to publicly state that. Like, he's struggling with his game. If he's afforded the opportunity to play, then play.
But make it 36 holes. You've got to be able to.
It's a sponsoring jump.
He said afterwards, it took him a day or two afterwards, and he said, I was feeling flu-like symptoms. It was like the NBA go-to reasoning there. But you've got to be able to make it 36 holes.
I agree that he should finish it out, but as far as the hang it up, Mike, and whatnot, he should hang it up.
He should hang it up. He was saying what everyone else is thinking.
I know, but Mike should be able to hang it up on his terms.
Lav's saying he shouldn't.
I'm torn. I am torn. Because he's clearly fighting his game, and you have to respect the guy for continuing to put himself out there. He's clearly getting embarrassed.
Yeah,
he's 0 for his last
100
24.
Times more embarrassed than anyone else out there, and for him to still be working on his game.
So why not quit?
Because he's a competitor. If you're an, that is so easy.
He's not really competitive.
That's so easy as an armchair observer to be like, yeah, just quit. It's only been your dream and passion to play professional golf for 25 years. You're going through an ungodly rough patch. And then you
for the last 5 years now.
He had a runner-up at Colonial, 2014.
No, it was at Nelson. He has had these patches before, and then all of a sudden come out, and it really was 1 week at Nelson, and he almost won the golf tournament.
Yes, Brendan Todd beat him by
He's
two.
A professional golfer.
Out of the blue. Yeah.
So then you're just said, oh, okay, I'm just going to napalm him and tell him to throw it up. Like, how easy is it for you to say that when it's a guy whose entire career and goal in life has been to play professional golf? He's doing everything he can the last year and a half.
At some point, it becomes too much.
I agree, but he should do it on his own terms. It shouldn't be you, shouldn't be me, shouldn't be Will.
Well, he wouldn't
sure
be doing
as heck
it
shouldn't
own.
Be Dowie with Vanderwall.
If the tour directors were doing their job in finding someone who's actually competitive, then Mike Weir wouldn't have a choice.
But if I'm a tournament director, I'm thinking bottom line. Who's bringing in revenue? Who's bringing in extra ticket sales?
Mike Weir's bringing in ticket sales?
Absolutely.
Yes.
There are people
Lord.
That flock down from the Great White North, and they will go watch Mike Weir on Hilton.
Guarantee you.
That's unsettling.
That may be, but that's the state of the game, my friend.
And that's the final word, I guess, if you will. It's been a few
hashtag
years since
unsettling.
Mike Weir has won on the PGA Tour. Guys, always a fun time. Sorry for, you know, a few body
blows. I like the feisty Savarikas. This
in the show. Bring a little heat this Monday, right? Yeah. Lavner, Will Gray, George Savarikas. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for joining us on the Monday Scramble podcast.